Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have a really, really informative show for you today. Our guest is Ross Greenstein of Scholarship for Athletes. And before I bring Ross on the air to talk about college recruiting and what our kids need to be doing right now, I want to just kind of give you a little background on my relationship with Ross and interaction with him over the past few years since starting Parenting Aces. Those of you who have been around for a while, I'm sure have seen his name mentioned. Ross has been on this show before talking about college recruiting, but more personally, he's been working with my son quite a bit and has had some really, really great advice for my son. One of the things I love most about Ross is the fact that he doesn't sugarcoat anything. He's very blunt and to the point, and sometimes you can hear him speak and feel like, oh my gosh, he's, you know, just being so hypercritical, or, you know, that's not true. But the bottom line is he knows his stuff. He's been around the college recruiting world and the college tennis world for quite some time. He played college tennis himself at the University of Florida. And actually, a funny connection, Ross's childhood coach is my cousin-in-law, which is kind of a bizarre thing, but just shows you how incestuous the tennis world truly is. So I really want y'all to listen carefully to what Ross has to say, and though some of it may rub you the wrong way and you may feel like it's a little harsh, I promise you it will serve you and your child well as you go through this recruiting process. It's been wonderful for my son and for me as well. I've learned a lot. So I'll stop talking now and bring Ross on the air. Just a reminder, we do air live for 60 minutes. At the end of the 60 minutes, we'll cease to be airing live, but the show will continue to record. So if we go on past the 60-minute mark, please tune in to ParentingAces.com, click on the radio show tab later this afternoon, and the entire broadcast will be there as a podcast for you to listen to. All right, without further ado, let me bring Ross on the line. Ross, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I know you have so much information to share. I have some questions for you. So I don't know, did you hear my intro? Did I leave out anything of importance that you want to add before we jump in?
I'm not that mean. Come on. I just tell the truth.
No, you're not mean. I didn't say you were mean. I said you could be a little harsh sometimes, but it's only harsh because sometimes we don't like hearing the truth, right?
Yeah, well, that's true. There's not a lot of people that give the truth to the parents and student athletes.
That is exactly the truth for sure. So let's jump right in. We're going to focus on the class of 2015 and the class of 2016, so our current high school juniors and seniors, because time is of the essence for these student athletes right now as they really jump in heavily to college recruiting. Let's start with the 2015s, the kids that are high school seniors right now. In most parts of the country, I suspect school has either already started or is getting ready to start in the next couple weeks. So what do these kids need to be focused on right now at the beginning of their senior year?
Okay, so I'm going to speak obviously as in general terms as I possibly can. Very important for the people listening to the show that they understand that every student athlete we're working right now, we're working with over 100, 2015. They're all in a very different place. And what I mean by that is, depending on their tennis level, you know, if you're a blue chip or a five-star, a four-star, a three-star, two-star, one-star, the process is going to be different. And then if you're looking at D1s or D2s or D3s, the process is going to be different. So some parents will listen to me talk and understand that that might not be specifically for their son or daughter because they're in a different situation. But in general, the 2015s right now should be speaking to their college coaches that they've been talking to over the last year, making sure that they have their transcripts and test scores sent to all their coaches. Most of our clients are now setting up visits for the fall, and just to go into kind of the official visits versus unofficial visit. The official visit is where the college will pay for the student athlete, pay for their flight, pay for their meals, pay for their hotel to come visit the school and stay at the school for 48 hours. And each student athlete can do 5 of those official visits. You can't do more than that. So if you have 5 schools you're interested in, they can pay for it. If you have 6, 7 schools you want to visit, then you have to take those additional visits unofficially, which means the parents have to pay for the bill, pay for the hotels, pay for the flights, pay for the food. What does get confusing is pretty much just the elite Division I schools that do offer official visits. So if you're looking at D3 schools, D2 schools, lower level D1 schools, a lot of them will invite you to visit this fall, but they will not pay for it. It will have to be an unofficial visit where the family pays.
So that just because a school is offering you an official visit or an unofficial visit doesn't necessarily indicate a difference in their interest level in your athlete. It may just be a budget thing.
Exactly. It has nothing to do. If they're inviting you, they obviously want you. They wouldn't invite you if they didn't. It's just a budget thing. Some schools just don't have the budget to fly in all these kids officially and pay for everything. Hopefully the kids and parents don't take it the wrong way. That if it's, you know, hey, look, we want you, but we can't pay for it. You know, sometimes what the coaches will do is they can't pay for the flight, but once the kids get there, they'll have them put up with kids in the team, and they'll pay for their food while they're there. They'll try to do as much as they can and what their budget allows. And what you're getting to, which is a great, you know, point, that every student-athlete in the 15 class, whether you're a blue chip or one star, no matter what schools you're looking at, is you talked about market value, which is, well, how interested is the coach? That's the most important thing that the student-athletes need to be doing from now until they commit. And what we mean by market value is just, you know, this is a job interview, and you always want to know, as you know, where you stand. So if a coach is inviting you on a visit, just like a company is bringing you in to interview, well, how many student-athletes are they bringing in? Did they invite 3? Did they invite 5? Did they invite 15 kids to come in? It's very important to ask that question. And then obviously you want to know, well, where do you stand on that list? So in the coach's eyes, am I 15? Am I 10? Am I 5? And then obviously how many are they looking to hire? So, you know, if they're only bringing in 7 kids and they've got 2 spots, then you have a very good chance. If they're bringing in 15 kids and there's 1 spot, obviously the odds change. And so it's very difficult for the student-athletes to ask this question, but it's very important that they ask the coaches just straight up, where do I stand on your wish list? And also understand that that wish list changes every single day for the coaches as they're losing kids that they want, and as they're committing to kids and they're getting the kids they want. And so it's important to continue to ask that question every couple weeks throughout this next fall.
That's great advice. That is really great advice. So all of my son's friends are starting to fill out college applications. I'm not talking about his tennis friends, I'm just talking about his school buddies. Is he supposed to be filling out college applications right now?
Most of the 2015s do not. It really depends on kind of how they're going through their process. And if they're planning to commit early this November, meaning they're going to, you know, apply to a school, commit verbally to the coach, whether that's D1 or D3, then they will only be doing one application for that college. And what that means is that the college coaches will take the student athlete's current transcript and the classes they're going to take the senior year. They'll take their test scores to the admissions and say, hey, you know, this is a student athlete we're recruiting. If they apply early or if we give them a scholarship, will they get in? And the admissions will say yes. Now, there always are some student-athletes who want to apply to 8 schools and just see where they get in and then make a decision. So obviously those student-athletes will need to do applications. But if you're planning to apply early to a school, that whether it's binding or non-binding, you're planning to receive a scholarship from the school, then you do not need to do the application.
What if you're thinking of walking on to a team?
The same situation. You know, there's no such thing as a walk-on anymore. If you're not getting scholarship money, but you are going to be on the team called a preferred walk-on, the coach will still help you get into the school, and they will still take your transcripts and test scores and still, you know, make sure that if you apply, you'll get in. And the other important thing on the admissions part of it is, you know, the college coaches are there to help. So if you're filling out an application, if you need to do an essay for a specific school, the college coaches are there. They'll help you. They'll help you with, you know, exactly what you need. If you need to speak to people at the university about what they're looking for, they'll put you in touch with the right people. So, you know, the student athletes really don't need to feel like they're doing this alone or feel like, you know, it's going to be an overwhelming process. Once a coach has said to a student athlete, look, we want you, and we have a spot for you on scholarship or not, and the student athlete says, okay, I'm taking that spot, I'm coming, then they're pretty much at that point a part of the team, and the coaches and the people in the athletic office will do everything they can to help the student athlete.
Is it important for the student athletes in this current senior class, this graduating class this year, to speak with the coaches ahead of time to make sure the coach is aware of their GPA, their test scores, and all of that?
Oh, yeah.
To make sure that they're even a potential fit?
Oh, yeah. They should have already done that, but that's why earlier I said, you know, every coach should have their transcripts and test scores now. A lot of these 2015s will be taking the ACT and SAT again this fall to raise their score. I would say 25 to maybe 35% of our clients will be taking it again this fall, hoping to raise their score, which will allow them either easier entrance to the schools they are talking to now or actually give them some new schools that they don't currently have on their list by raising their score. And so that has to be communicated now. And some coaches might say, hey, look, you know, we really want you. But we need you to take the test again in the fall, and we need you to at least try to raise your score.
Okay, that's good information to have for sure. Okay, so the kids are hopefully planning their official and unofficial visits. I know that my son, for example, has friends who have already, quote, committed to college, but the official first signing day isn't until November. So what does that mean, that these kids who have already announced committing to schools, how binding is that?
Well, in today's era, unfortunately, too many kids are committing early and not taking their official visit. A verbal commitment is not binding. It really means nothing. If the student athletes were smart, they would still take a few official visits to other schools just to make sure that the school they committed to is the school that they 100% want to be. Now, obviously, the college coaches don't want them to do that. You know, they would prefer that you know, if they committed already to the University of Georgia, then really they would just take an official visit this fall just to University of Georgia and then sign in November with the University of Georgia to whatever scholarship amount they agreed on. You know, I would recommend them looking at least at one other school, maybe two more, just to make sure that they, you know, University of Georgia is 100% the best school they want to be at. For a lot of the student athletes that don't take official visits and only visit one school, you know, when things don't go well at that school, you're always wondering, you know, should I have taken more visits? Should I have looked at other options? And I also think it's very important just to solidify for the student athlete and their parents that the school they did make an early commitment to is the best school for them. Without taking an official visit, you know, you really don't get to know the current team. Last year when they visited unofficially, the team is going to keep losing seniors and juniors that will never be on their team. And, you know, an official visit's when you're not with your parents, you're just on your own. It's, you know, a good opportunity to really bond with the team and see the team in a different light that you can't do unofficially. So I'm a big fan of the official visits. I hope the kids take at least two or three of them. But unfortunately, a lot of these kids that have committed don't want to take the visits and will just take one visit to the school they've committed to, and then they'll sign in November.
We have actually a friend who did commit early, verbally, over the summer, and was very straightforward with the coach and said, there are other schools I'm still talking to. And the coach said, no problem. You know, we want that verbal commitment from you, but no problem. And then the next day withdrew the offer, saying that the coach didn't want somebody that was still looking at other schools. So, you know, I guess my point in sharing that is that not all the coaches are 100% upfront. And until a child has signed that letter of intent, there's no binding agreement on either side of the equation, right?
Yeah, there's no binding agreement. I think, look, ultimately, as a parent, you know, you really need to understand that this is a multi-billion-dollar business and that the coaches are getting paid a lot of money and that, you know, your child is on a job interview and it's never done until it's done, just like any business negotiation. And ultimately, you got to do what's best for the student-athlete. Now, in a situation where a student-athlete wants to play for a coach, and then that coach says, look, if you don't commit to me now, then I'm not going to take you, then they should never be going to that college in the first place. And so I know it's hard for parents to understand, but if a coach says in junior year they want you, but then in senior year they don't, why would you ever want your son to be going to play for that coach anyway? And so it gets a little confusing, but ultimately the coach is doing the student-athlete a favor by saying, hey, look, well, we did want you, but now we want other people instead. Good. You know, let them take those other people. And there's always a good fit for the student-athletes out there, and it's always going to be better. Because if you go to a school where the coach doesn't really want you or doesn't invest in you or doesn't put a lot of, you know, time and energy and money and believe in you, you're going to end up on the bench and having probably a miserable experience anyway.
That's a great point. So what about the kids who aren't getting the phone calls, aren't getting the emails, aren't getting the letters from coaches right now, and they're in their senior year of high school and, you know, maybe are panicking a little bit? What should they be doing?
First of all, I would say everybody's panicking. Even if you have official visits set up, even if you're a blue chip, it's still nerve-wracking. It's still tense. Everyone thinks that blue chips can just go wherever they want. It does not work like that. There's still limited spots, limited scholarships. So everybody's panicking. But if you're not getting the attention from the coaches, I would tell you there's one main reason. You're not giving enough attention to the coaches. You're not showing enough interest. I would say 99.9% of the student-athletes do a terrible job of interviewing, meaning you've got to be knocking these coaches' doors down. You need to be persistent. You need to be calling and calling and calling. You cannot email and call these coaches enough. If the coaches at some point get back to you and say, hey, look, thank you for the interest, you know, but we're full or we're not interested in you or, you know, whatever it is, then you can move on. But if you're not getting an answer from a coach, whether they want you or don't want you, that's because the student-athlete is not being persistent enough, they're not calling enough, they're not emailing enough. And, you know, the student-athletes need to show a ton of interest. College coaches want student-athletes who are dying to come to their school. They want kids who are going to do anything for that school. So even if the student-athlete is a little bit lower in tennis but is dying to be there, college coaches will always take that student-athlete because they know once they get there, they'll appreciate it, they'll work hard, they'll love it, and they'll do anything for that school. And so the biggest problem we have in this recruiting process is that the student-athletes have never been on a job interview. They're a little scared. They're a little nervous. They're not sure what's appropriate. And so for us and with our clients, I mean, it's hard, but we have to tell them, keep calling, keep emailing, keep calling, keep emailing. You can't do it enough. And so that's probably the main reason they're not getting the attention that they want. Now, the other thing obviously could be that they're looking at schools that aren't at their level, but I don't really buy into that because, as you and I have discussed, the 2015 boys and girls will not be playing their college tennis matches for 18 months. 18 months, as every parent knows, is an eternity. There's no way for any student-athlete to know how good they'll be in 18 months. There's no way for any college coach to know. The college coaches also don't even know who's going to be on their team in 18 months. And so if a student-athlete is kicking down doors to play for certain schools and telling the coaches, look, I'll do anything. I'll be the first person to practice. I'll be the last person to leave. I'll take as many private lessons as, you know, you'll give me. I'm going to get great grades. I'm going to work hard. You know, I've got 18 months from now until then, and here's what I plan to do over the next 18 months. It's very rare that a college coach will say no to that student-athlete. It just never happens.
Interesting. Well, it is true. And, I mean, I think for the boys more so than the girls, the physical development that can happen over an 18-month period is just tremendous at this age.
Yeah, and I think that, look, every team in college tennis has players on their bench, every single team. They're not looking to recruit players for their bench, but if they're going to have them, they want to have the right ones. And the right bench players are the kids that are dying to be there. They're going to work hard. They're going to do everything the coach asks, that have the potential to someday help the team. And that can be articulated very well by a student-athlete that's looking at a school that maybe currently doesn't have the ranking or the level that the coach is desiring. Now, the other thing that you alluded to is timing. Look, every college coach right now should be recruiting blue chips, right? I mean, that's their job. Get the best player you possibly can. Now, once the blue chips are gone and you're not going to get them, the coach moves to the five stars. That should happen, you know, pretty soon here, about September. Once the five stars are all gone, they move to the four stars. Then they move to the three. Then they move to the two. Then they move to the one. That's just how job interviews work. So if you're a three-star or a four-star right now, and you're just getting a little bit of love from coaches or not much, hang in there. You got plenty of time. Not until middle of September, even October, will a lot of coaches have an idea of who they get and don't get. There's plenty of examples of college coaches that have a wish list, 10 student athletes, and all 10 of them go to a different school. That's part of the business as well. Every single coach has had that happen to them, where they put in a ton of effort and brought kids in on visits and got none of them. And so it's just really important to stay patient, continue to keep calling, keep emailing, keep asking what your market value is, keep showing the interest. And in my experience, we have had so many student-athletes go to colleges that technically or ranking-wise they have no business being at. And people would say, why would the school ever take that kid based off his ranking? But those are my clients that are just relentless and won't take no for an answer and tell the coaches they'll do anything to be a part of the team. And eventually, there's always a spot for those kids.
Well, one thing that you said to me a while ago that really has resonated with me is that it is the coach's job, the college coach's job, to constantly try to attempt to replace the top players in their lineup. That every year they want to recruit new ones and twos so that they continue to strengthen, right? And mm-hmm. And the reason I bring this up is because you were talking about having a strong bench. If a player is, a student athlete, excuse me, is going to a school where they know they're not going to play their first year, realistically, what are the chances that they're ever going to play if the coach is doing his or her job properly?
Well, from the, I mean, two answers to that. The first thing is that I'm not a fan of telling any student athlete right now, you're not going to be good enough to play. Because, again, we're talking about 18 months. We don't know who will be on their team. We don't know how the student-athlete's going to work. So if I have a client who's looking at a school that we know right now is going to be very difficult for them to play at, it's important to discuss how hard they're going to have to work over the next 18 months, how much ground they're going to have to cover. If they're willing to put in the time and the effort and the work, you know, maybe they will play. And so I never tell kids you can't play. Now, if you in 18 months you get there and it looks like you're not going to play and maybe, you know, they play six players and you're not seven, you're more like 9, 10, 11, then, you know, we asked a lot of college coaches that at Kalamazoo 1 year and did a poll, and we'd say it's a 20% chance that if you don't play as a freshman that you'll ever play and have a significant role. So one out of five kids end up making it. Now, if you go to a college and it comes around and it looks like you're not going to play, obviously you can always redshirt, which means you don't lose a year of eligibility, and you practice with the team for the year. You see how much better you get. And if it looks like you're just not going to be close, you can transfer and you still have 4 years to play. But, you know, realistically, I think that's all part of picking a college, which is, you know, how hard is it going to be for me to play? Now, there's a flip side to that. You know, with all these early commitments and even signing in November, even a November signee is still looking at, you know, a good, you know, 14, 15 months before their matches start. And for every student-athlete that the coach says, look, you know, I'm going to take this kid, I, you know, hopefully they work hard and they play, there's always a student-athlete that they do give money to, that they do recruit hard, who basically either tanks after they've committed or gets worse or doesn't work hard or whatever it is, doesn't pan out. And that student-athlete they have penciled in playing 4 or 5 or 6 that freshman year doesn't play. And that happens all the time as well. So I'm pretty optimistic. As long as the student-athletes know what they're getting themselves into and know how hard they're going to work after they commit, I always believe that, you know, there is a chance that they will play, and if they don't, then you deal with it then.
All right, well, that is a good segue to my next question, which is about what happens if an athlete doesn't pan out, they get hurt, or like you say, they just decide they're not going to work or they tank, but they've been given a scholarship. Is that scholarship money locked in for 4 years? And what I mean by that is, when you sign that letter of intent with the school, is the coach committed to giving you that money every year for 4 years regardless, or is it something different?
Well, again, long answer, but there are some colleges now, including USC, that are giving 4-year scholarships, meaning you can rest and relax if you're going to get the scholarship for 4 years. And the only way it would be taken away is if you mess up, you know, off the court and do something, you know, really stupid. But in general, most of these kids' scholarships and roster spots are a 1-year scholarship. It's a year-to-year basis. And, you know, I would say that don't worry about the contract. Don't worry about the scholarship. If the student-athletes are working their butts off on and off the court, they're doing every single thing the coach is asking, they're staying out of trouble, they're getting good grades, and they're working hard, and they're just not good enough to play, or they're not, you know, improving like the way the coach thought, then the coach will never take away a scholarship or try to get them to leave. That's just not part of the tennis business. But for the student-athletes who aren't working hard, are causing problems with the team, aren't listening to coach, aren't doing what they need to do in the classroom, then it is very likely that the coach will reduce your scholarship or let that student-athlete know that, hey, you know, you need to transfer, you're not going to play here, you're not good enough. And unfortunately, part of the business is college coaches, you know, making student-athletes' lives, you know, not great, to, you know, kind of force them to transfer and force them to leave. And it's the dirty side of the business. It's the unfortunate side of the business. But, you know, the coaches want to win, and if student-athletes aren't doing what they need to do, it is common for them to sit down with student-athletes and let them know, look, you're not going to play here, and you're going to be happier if you transfer. And then you can get into the legalities if the student-athlete doesn't want to transfer, what happens. But in general, I would say, you know, look, if you're working hard and you're doing what you're asked, you're going to be fine. You'll keep your scholarship, and you've got to keep working hard. If you're doing things off the court and you give the coaches a reason to take scholarship money away or to, you know, they don't want you anymore because you're not winning and you're causing problems, then it is a one-year contract. They don't have to renew it. And that's also part of the reason why we have such a high transfer rate in college tennis.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's switch over to the high school juniors because we're about halfway through our hour, so I want to make sure I touch on them too. What should the class of 2016 student athletes be doing right now?
The class of 2016 really needs to, sit down and start thinking about geography. You know, where in the country do they want to be? What type of academic institution do they want? Big school, small school, how far away from home? What I like to do with our 16s now is really look at schools and take tennis out of the equation. Nothing to do with tennis. What are 8 to 10 schools that you would be interested in? And then, you know, make a proper resume, email the coaches. Coaches now will be able to email you back. Set up a time to speak with a coach. And so what just like you and I would do for business, which is, you know, when's a good time, Lisa, for you and I to talk, and you give me a day and a time, and I confirm, same thing these 16s need to be doing with the coaches, which is, hey, coach, you know, I'd love to just ask you a few questions, when's a good time and number for me to reach you. And then at that point, ask the coaches, you know, what grades, what test scores, and what tennis level do I need to have in order to be on your team or get a scholarship? It doesn't obviously mean that the 16s need to have those grades and test scores and tennis level now, because most of them don't even have a test score. And so what we would recommend is just get that education. So if you have 8 to 10 schools that fit what you think you want without being a tennis player, then let's find out what the criteria is to receive a job offer at those 8 to 10 schools. After you speak to the coaches and they tell you, look, these are the grades and test scores and tennis level you need to have, then you might need to adjust the list. You might need to say, you know what, I don't think I have that. I can get to that tennis level, or I don't think I can get to that test score. I'm crossing that off the list, and I need to add some new ones. Or you might say, okay, you know, this is going to be tough, but of the 8 to 10, I had, you know, 4 or 5 that I think are realistic and I can get to. Got another 4 or 5 that are going to be tough, but I'm going to work very hard to get to. And just that education and that type of information usually fuels these 2016s. They work harder in school, do better academically, and do better in tennis because now they know, hey, if I can achieve these goals, these schools will be in play for me.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about the NCAA rules for contacting the coaches. So you said, for the 2016s, if they email a coach can now respond. What other type of contact can the 2016s have with the coaches at this point?
So starting September, the rules have changed, and the coaches are going to be able to email and actually text the student-athletes in the class. And we could have a whole show about what student-athletes should do. But ultimately, 2016 should be expecting emails and text messages from coaches. Hopefully, they've already spoken with their parents or their coaches or someone like us for how to handle it. It's going to be a big change in recruiting for these student athletes, and you know they really need to come up with a game plan for how they're going to handle the recruiting process moving forward. What's the appropriate amount of time they want to, you know, spend on this process, and do they want to be texting with coaches or not? Do parents want their student athletes texting with coaches or not? And you know, I think every family is probably going to have their own plan, but it's very important to have a plan and make sure that the coaches know how they would like their sons or daughters to be recruited, and whether that's through email, through phone calls, through text messages, through Facebook, on what parents are going to deem appropriate for their child.
And so you're saying the parents, but the advice that I've heard you give most of the time is that we parents need to let our children drive this bus, and but yet we also need to be doing our due diligence as parents. And one of the suggestions you made to me was to talk to the parents of the existing players on the teams where my son is looking and hear what they have to say. And so how do we get a hold of those parents? Because that contact information obviously isn't available on the college website or anything like that. So how do you suggest reaching out to them?
Okay, well, two questions there. I would say that the parents need to be extremely involved in their student-athlete recruiting process. They need to be behind the scenes, meaning that the student-athletes need to be the ones talking with the coaches, communicating with the coaches, emailing, phone calls, you know, whether it's texting, Facebooking. It needs to be coming from the student-athletes. The parents need to be right there next to them, especially now that the recruiting's starting earlier and that the texting and emailing starting earlier. The parents need to be right there with, hey, you know, this is what you should be emailing, this is what you should be texting, here's what you should, questions you should be asking, here's what thank you notes you need to be writing. So I'm a huge believer that the parents need to know what's going on. They need to be involved. They need to be asking someone like us questions, like, hey, you know, we're the parent, we're not exactly sure what is appropriate or what we should be doing or, you know, how our son or daughter should be communicating. And then if we give them the answers, they can help the student-athlete. So, you know, yes, it's the student-athletes who are on the job interview. They need to be the ones doing all the communicating. But that means the parents need to be right next to them and making sure they're helping them and watching them until they feel like the student-athletes are a little bit older and a little bit more comfortable and really have the hang of it and are doing what they need to be doing. The second part to that is every single college coach should be able to give a parent other parents' contact information. If you ask a college coach that your son or daughter is being recruited by and say, hey, look, I need some references. I want to talk to some former student-athletes and I want to talk to some student-athletes' parents. Please give me some. I mean, I can't imagine there's any coach in the whole country that wouldn't do that. And
at
if they can't give you some, then obviously that's a red flag.
At what point should you ask for that, though?
As early as possible. You know, I don't think there's ever a time too early. I mean, if your son's dream right now is to work for ESPN or work for Google or work for Twitter or Facebook, start now. I mean, he's not looking for a job right now, but it can't hurt to start talking to employees at the company and see how they like it and start to build those relationships. So I would say it's never too early. I would say even if your child's in 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, start building these relationships, start getting the education, start talking to kids maybe from your section that are 4 or 5 years older that are already in college and reach out to them and say, hey, you know, I've seen you around at tournaments. I've seen your name in some draws. You're at a school that my son or daughter is interested in. Love to talk to you and talk to your parents. Just ask us some questions. And, you know, in our business, I find it very rare that parents aren't willing to talk to younger kids or parents of younger kids, because most parents had some type of, you know, not so great USTA experience and not so great college recruiting process. And so they're more than willing to reach back out to people and say, hey, you know, this is what we went through. Here's the things we did well. Here's the mistakes we made. And so it's just a question of just reaching out.
Gotcha. All right, so let's go back to, the 2016s. And is there anything else they should be doing at this point other than reaching out to the coaches at the schools they're interested in and putting their work together?
Really making sure they're taking the right classes, depending on what colleges they're interested in. You know, a lot of kids make a lot of mistakes with taking the wrong classes or the right classes. All the 16s should have a test score this fall. A lot of them tell me they're going to wait to the spring, which is a huge mistake. The spring of junior year is the busiest semester of a high school student-athlete's life. If you're taking APs or honors classes, you've got finals, you've got prom, you've got all the tournaments that come up in the spring. So every 2016 should take an SAT or ACT this fall. I recommend for our clients to take it in the fall, which is September. See how you do, and then take it again in the winter, you know, November, December, and be done with it. That's the best thing a 2016 can do. Unfortunately, a lot of these kids are behind or procrastinate or don't get the advice. You know, we even have clients that are now seniors who don't have a test score, never got around to taking it because every time they were going to take it, they had a tournament or they had an AP or they got sick or something happened. And so we have seniors that you're not allowed to take an official visit without a test score. So unfortunately, we have some clients who actually can't even take an official visit this fall until October, and they get their test score back because they're just not eligible for it. So very important that the 16s get the test scores done as early as possible. And then, you know, the other thing, obviously, is look at tournament schedule. Make sure, you're talking to some people who are educated about tournaments and what to play and what not to play, and setting up maybe some unofficial visits this year and kind of looking at your schedule. Just like the professional athletes, these student athletes are so busy. There's so much going on with tournaments and tests and, like we said, homecomings and proms and holidays. It's really important to put a calendar together for the next 9 months and really make sure that you're filling in properly.
And so when they make that tournament schedule, I'm talking the 2016s, do you have them, email the schedule to the coaches and let them know, so the coaches maybe will come out and watch them? And if the coaches do come out, what are the rules about speaking with a coach while they're there for both the athlete and the parent?
Yes, they should be sending the coaches with their resume, should be their tournament schedule, so the coaches know where they'll be and when. Also very important that before they play a tournament, they let the coaches know they'll be there just to remind them. After the tournament, they send them an email with how they did. So it gives student-athletes an excuse to keep in touch with these coaches and really show interest, which we talked about before. And then as far as communication at the tournaments, there really can't be any. Just a simple hello between the student-athletes and parents at junior year. But, very important that the student-athletes try to. I know it's very difficult, but if you see a college coach at any of your tournaments, whether it's next summer at a clay courts, hard courts, or, throughout this year, the student-athletes need to be able to go up to the coaches, look the coaches in the eye, shake their hand, introduce themselves, or if they already know the coach, just say, hey, coach, just want to thank you for coming out and taking the time to watch. That's it, but those handshakes and notices that the coaches are there go a long way and shows the kids, again, their interest and obviously their maturity.
So you said junior year they can only say hello. What about during the senior year?
Same
for the
thing.
Class of
it's 2015? Just once the kids are in a tournament, they can't talk. Now, senior year, they can talk before a tournament or once the student-athlete is out of the tournament. But once the student-athlete has signed up for the tournament and it's started, there's no coaches aren't allowed to talk. And, again, it's just protecting the student-athletes because, if they're in a competition and 50 coaches want to meet with the student-athlete and they've tried to, it's hard for the student-athlete to concentrate.
Gotcha. All right, let's shift gears for a minute. There has been a lot of controversy over virtual school, homeschool curricula not being approved by NCAA, and players really having trouble with their eligibility. Can you address that a little bit, what you're seeing with your clients and what advice you give to families that are either considering homeschooling / virtual schooling or are currently doing that to make sure that their student athletes are indeed eligible to play?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I mean, I think that now we're seeing obviously an increased number of kids doing online virtual school. Just call the NCAA before you make any decision. Make sure you're writing down the people's names you're talking to and the dates and all the information you're getting. I think that NCAA slowly weeded out the schools that aren't good enough for them or aren't going to get credit. So I think that now maybe there's two or three major players in the game, and obviously they're accredited, but you can always call the NCAA and just ask and just say, hey, you know, we're thinking about switching to this school, and what do we need to get done? The other thing you can do if you're a little older, if you're talking to any college coaches, especially your local coaches, I mean, every student athlete lives within driving distance of a college, and they should know those coaches extremely well. They should know the kids in the team extremely well by watching their matches and hitting with them, and the local college can always help you. So if you have a good relationship with the coach there, they can always just run over to compliance or give you compliance's number and say, hey, you know, this is what we're thinking about doing. Do you mind checking? That's another way to kind of solve that issue. But in general, just got to talk to NCAA and make sure they're approved. Don't obviously talk to the school because I'm sure they'll tell you they're approved and what you need to get done, but it's up to the NCAA.
One thing we haven't touched on yet is the NCAA Eligibility Center. Can you just briefly talk about that and at what stage of the game the student athlete needs to be handling different aspects of their eligibility with NCAA?
Yeah, we tell the student athletes to sign up in the summer between junior and senior year. There's a website. It's not that difficult. You just log in, sign up, get them your transcripts, get them your test scores, answer some questions. Again, you should have already done all the work beforehand to make sure that you've taken the right amount of classes and you already have your test score and you've done everything, you know, legally. But that's when we tell the families to do it. Now, if you don't have an NCAA ID, you can't take an official visit. And so, you know, really just, you know, anytime in the summer before you're ready to take your official visits, the coaches need that ID.
Got it. And so basically all you do is go to NCAA.org and you can type in Eligibility Center in the search box and it'll pop right up. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, it's simple. And if you have a question to how to fill it out, again, that's what the college coaches are there for. You should already be establishing relationships with them by the time you're going to be a senior. So summer going into senior year, you should have a few coaches that you can call and just say, hey, I got a quick question, you know, what should I do here? But it should be self-explanatory.
Right, right. Okay, let's switch gears again and talk about specifically what you're hearing from college coaches in light of all these changes in format and in the way the USTA tournament structure is set up, in the way the ITF structure is set up. What are coaches looking for? Are they, I mean, because we hear mixed messages that, you know, you have to be a blue chip to even be considered, or, you know, your USTA ranking has to be at this level for a coach to even be interested in you. But my personal experience with my son has been very different from that. And I'm curious what you can share that you're hearing from coaches to kind of give parents a better sense of how to choose the right schools to even be looking at based on their child's tennis level.
Well, I think it's a long, obviously we could talk for hours about this, but I think a couple main important things, which is every family is different. You know, do what's best for your family. Do what's best for your student-athlete and your child. And everyone's going to have their own opinion on how to raise your child, but ultimately, you know, you got to do what's best for your family and what you think is the right thing. college coaches just want the best tennis players. Does that mean you have to fly all over the world to play? You know, no, I don't think so. But if that's your opinion and that's your prerogative, then do it. I think the college coaches could care less if you're ranked. You know, if you never played one USTA tournament or one ITF tournament, but they watch you play for 10 minutes, and they'll say they know how good you are. So every coach is going to use the word eye test. It only takes them less than 5, maybe 10 minutes to watch a student-athlete play and to know exactly what their level is and know where they're weak and where they're strong and what they need to do. So, you know, for the parents out there, you don't need to play the USTA event. You don't need to play ITF events. You need to just do what you think is going to make your child a better tennis player. Now, obviously, I would say you need to play tennis tournaments to become a better player, but whether that's open tournaments, adult tournaments, junior tournaments, USTA, ITF, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't matter to the college coaches. They're going to watch the kids play. Now, as far as recruiting, again, it just goes back to building the relationships. You know, if the student athletes are emailing the coaches and calling the coaches and building relationships with them, the coaches are the ones hiring. This is my biggest problem with the parents and the student athletes, really the parents, is they're making decisions based off what their junior coaches are telling them. And they're getting advice from other parents and other kids and junior tennis coaches, which to me doesn't make any sense at all, because the junior tennis coaches and the parents and the other kids and the people around, they're not hiring. The only people that matter are the college coaches. So if you have a question about what you should be doing or what tournaments you should play or what ranking you need or what grades you need or what test scores you need or what the college coaches want, just talk to the college coaches. Ultimately, they want a student-athlete who's mature, who's doing well in school, who's working hard on and off the court to get stronger and get faster and become a better player, and they want to get to know the student-athletes. And they want student-athletes who are dying to play for them and come to their school. Anything more than that is irrelevant. It's not about the blue chips and the 5 stars and the 4 stars. And as everybody knows, the rankings aren't even accurate. And every single parent I speak with will tell me the rankings aren't accurate. Well, of course they're not. They can't be accurate. They don't have, there's not enough tournaments for these kids to play each other. They're not full-time tennis players. So the main issue is do what's going to make your child a better student athlete. Do what's going to make them, you know, better for the college coaches to when they watch them for those 5 or 10 minutes. And that's really your answer. And if you have specific questions, talk to the college coaches.
That's great advice. It really is. And I will attest to that fact that I've gotten so much misinformation over the years from other parents and junior coaches. And not until we kind of dove into the recruiting process ourselves have I gotten the real answers to my questions from the coaches, the college coaches themselves. And so, yeah, I totally concur with what you're saying, Ross. And go ahead.
And just to add to that, a lot of college coaches now are doing camps where Brown, Dartmouth, all over the country, where you can actually go and be evaluated by college coaches, and they can actually be on the court with you, practicing with you. And they'll give you a great assessment of your child's level. You don't need to go to an ITF or go travel around the world to go figure out how good your child is. You can just sign them up for a camp. Or there's a lot of campus showdowns now where you can go to a college, hit with the kids of the team, and get the coach's opinion. And so, you know, that's something that the student-athletes and parents need to take more advantage of. You should be able to hit with the local college kids, especially in the summertime, to get an idea of your child's level. I would say the easiest part of my business is figuring out a student-athlete's level. Parents come to me all the time and say, well, you know, we don't know our level. We don't know if he's good enough. Well, that's not hard. You just get the college coach or kids on the team to hit with them. That's actually the easiest part of the process. And so, you know, I'm not a big fan of the you know, kind of the showcases because the coaches aren't on the court. They're not talking with the kids and working with the kids. But the camps are great and a great opportunity to get an assessment from a college coach.
That's good advice. And again, I mean, just based on personal experience, I know when you first started working with our family, the list of schools that you and my son came up with looked very different from the current list. And it changed after you got a chance to see him and see him play.
You know, and I think that's part of the process is that it should change. As the student athletes learn more and their game changes and their, you know, wants and needs change. And like you said, I mean, you can't know a kid's level by just going on tennis recruiting. It's just, and that the coaches, you know, aren't going to recruit off of that anyway. They're going to watch the student athletes play.
Well, so if you live in a place where you're not near the schools that your child is looking into, is it worth getting a recruiting video made or making one yourself?
No, because the thing is that let's say you live in Atlanta, but you want to go to school in California. If you still make a good relationship with the Georgia Tech coach or the Emory coach or the University of Georgia coach, and you're going to their camps and you're building relationships, you're hitting with the kids on those teams, it only takes one phone call from the Georgia coach or Georgia Tech or Emory to a school in California and says, hey, look, I know this kid, I know their family, he's an amazing kid, he or she's been coming to our matches, he or she hits with the kids in their team, parents are unbelievable, I would love to have him, but unfortunately, you know, a student-athlete really wants to get away from home and wants to be out in California. This is a student-athlete you should be recruiting. Done. That's the best phone call a student-athlete can ever get is from a current college coach.
And should the student-athlete ask that coach to make that phone call? Should the parents do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like anything in life. If you have a good relationship with somebody, they'll be more than happy to do you a favor and make that phone call. If you don't know the college coach at all and you've gone to one match and maybe you've only hit with one kid on his team once and they don't really know you or your family and you say, hey, can you call a coach for me? They're probably going to say, you know, no, I don't know you that well. I don't feel that comfortable and I don't really know your level.
Right, right. But, again, the kid should make that request, the student athlete himself
yeah,
or herself?
Course.
Yeah, okay.
Say, hey, coach, you know, I've been talking to some schools in California and I wanted to be able to put you as a reference on my resume. Would you be okay with that? And the coach says yes. Usually it'll be the schools in California calling that coach because they see, oh, wow, you know, Coach Diaz is a reference.
Right, right. That's great advice, too, really great advice. All right, what have we not touched on that we need to make sure that the parents of the 2015s and 2016s
well, the
know?
The main thing is just the same speech I give all the time, which is education, education, education. Keep asking questions. You can't ask enough questions. The kids can't be persistent enough. They can't email and call coaches enough. Talk to current players. Talk to former players. Talk to parents. Talk to, you know, players, you know, who were on the team in the past, their parents. Speak to different people like myself that are in the business, that know all the coaches. And, you know, really just get as much education as you can, as much information, and make sure they're coming from the right people, not the people you're paying, not junior coaches, not, you know, really, if you're interested in a certain college, talk to those coaches, talk to the kids on those teams. Those are the employees of the company, and those are the people who are hiring. You're not going to get better information than from those people.
Right. Now, what is your thought on going to actual dual matches at the schools that you're looking at?
They're great. Go to the dual matches. Introduce yourself to the coaches. Write a note to the coach that you were there. If there's visiting teams coming in, the schools you might be interested in, or schools you're not interested in, but then you watch them play, hey, coach, I was at the match, and I saw your team play, and I really love the way the energy you had and the way your team fought, and I know I'm really interested in learning more, and you just can't do that enough.
Right, and I will say
I think all junior coaches, in my opinion, obviously they do a terrible job, but they should be taking their entire academy and all the kids they coach to all the college matches. Now, unfortunately, they probably won't do it because they don't make money doing that, but that should be part of the curriculum at the academy is not only going to watch the matches, they should be going to watch the practices, they should be talking to the local kids, bringing them into the academy to talk to the kids about college tennis and what they need to do. And coaches are always more than happy to talk to younger, you know, kids and their parents. But, you know, that should be part of every junior tennis, you know, player in America's life, is watching practices and watching matches. And it's not just tennis, it's every sport. If you're a football player, basketball player, golfer, hockey, you should be doing that, because that's your, that's where you want to work. Again, I use the reference, if your son wants to work at ESPN or Facebook or Microsoft and their offices are in Atlanta, he should be down there getting to know those people. That's just common sense.
Right, right. Well, I think the misperception or the misunderstanding comes with exactly what you say. This whole thing is a big job interview, and I don't think enough people understand the correlation between recruiting and interviewing for a major job, and there really is a direct correlation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty simple. Look, the coaches are getting 1,000 resumes a year from kids who want to play and work for them. They only have 2 to 3 spots, and they can't get more of a job interview than that.
Right, right.
Every year they're hiring, pretty much, and every year they're losing people, and, you know, the coaches are obviously changing jobs as well. But, yes, you know, as a parent, you think about it as, my son or daughter would someday like to work for this company. What do we need to do to get there? And clearly, number one would be build a relationship with the people who are doing the hiring.
Well, I will end on that note, because I think that's the best advice that any of us can heed in this process. And I want to just say again that, Ross, you've been incredible helping us. And, I mean, you've helped me as much as you've helped my son through this process. And for the parents out there, if you're considering getting some help with the recruiting process, I will tell you that it's so nice to have somebody else saying the hard things to your child, that you're not the one that has to say those things, but it's coming from somebody with experience in the field. And it takes a lot of pressure off, because I think our kids really do feel the stress of this whole recruiting process. They've worked, you know, 10 years, most of them, to get to this place, and the light at the end of the tunnel is starting to shine in their face, and they want to make sure that they're making the right decision and getting to the best place that they can. So, Ross, I want to just thank you again for everything you're doing for us.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate you having me on. And for the parents that are out there, you know, feel free to contact me, email me, call me. You know, I'm happy to talk to them. And, you know, we've got different services now that start at $200, which isn't too expensive. And, you know, it's just really important that the parents understand that they need to be involved. They need to be helping their student-athletes. The student-athletes are going to be scared and nervous to do this work, but the earlier they start it, the easier it gets. It's a great opportunity to teach your student-athlete, your child, life skills of how to build a relationship, how to network, how to do a job interview, how to write a thank you note. So I've always felt like this is just the recruiting process is a gift that's been, you know, given to these student-athletes because of the 10 years of hard work they've put in, to not take advantage of it and to not have the student-athletes, you know, meet those local coaches, meet the local kids in the team, you know, meet these college coaches, reach out to them, talk to them, ask questions. You know, it's a wasted opportunity, because it's going to help your son or daughter for the rest of their life.
For sure, for sure. And all of Ross's contact information can be found on the links tab at parentingaces.com. So for those of you looking at how to reach out to Ross at Scholarship for Athletes, just look for that on our links page, or you can always email me and I'll be happy to put you all in touch. So Ross, thanks again for being
with us.
Thank you,
Lisa. We'll talk soon.
All right. Have a great week.
All right.
To the rest of you that are tuning in, thank you so much for listening today. Feel free to share the show. The link to the podcast will be online at parentingaces.com on our radio show tab later this afternoon. Have a great week. I will be coming at you live from the U.S. Open for the next 2 Mondays. I'm looking very forward to that. And for those of you who are traveling to New York during the Open, please tweet at me or shoot me a Facebook message or a text message and let me know when you're there so we can connect and sit down and, you know, share a cup of coffee or something and catch up. Look forward to it. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you next week.